Well, we're going to play something now from the next band that is coming up. I'm going to have J.J. Ferris, who is the lead singer, co-founder, and producer of this group. Let's play this. I love this whole album so far, but let's play Dragon Eye Girl, and then let's see if we can get J.J. on the phone. This is brand new music off their second album. It's only been a couple of decades between them. This one's aptly titled Slammin' Gladys 2. Girl, that's track two on album two from Slammin' Gladys, and that's the video that's out there right now. This album actually dropped today, as I understand it, today, January 12th. It's now officially out there. And joining us on the phone for Midwest Beat, second show, is J.J. Ferris is the guitarist, singer, producer, and the guy that's keeping his band together all this time. Welcome, J.J.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I was surprised when I got the notice that you guys were making album two. It's only been a couple of decades.
Close to three. We were fortunate enough to meet this guy named Charlie, John Templeman, in Ohio. Our singer Dave met up with him probably like a couple years back, and Charlie has a label called Jim Machine Records in Ohio, and he's doing some great work there. And said, "Hey, what do you think about Slim and Gladys doing some couple songs?" And so Dave, then our singer, called me, and like we talked, and like, okay, we could do a couple songs. So that turned into 7 songs initially, and it turned into this album. It was kind of like it wasn't really meant to be, and it just happened. It's serendipitous was all over our side.
So what had you guys been doing? I mean, it was 1992 when the first album came out. You were part of that whole scene that, sadly, you were mainstream rock, and then the grunge thing came out. You were working with bands like Poison and Warrant and all part of that giant scene, and suddenly grunge came out, and it's like everybody was out of work, and everything changed. And now you're back. But during that time in between, what have you been doing?
Yeah, when the grunge hit, it was tough, man, because I had to search for all my flannel shirts that I had when I was younger, and things that I didn't really have a lot of wardrobe that kind of coming from the era that we were all working in, and then grunge, it was like, whoa, okay, don't have to worry about dressing up anymore, doesn't matter, the hair, you know, so it was a big change. And during the interim of that, we all kind of kept busy. Dave did numerous solo albums. Al, the bass player Al Collins, he and his wife Stacey Collins, they work together regularly as Stacey Collins. So together they put out numerous albums as well. Steve, the drummer, Steve DeBoard, he also put out a solo album or two. And myself, I've just been kind of just keeping busy. I got involved with ABC Television shortly after all the bands were subsided, and I started working for them directly, and I got in. Now I do a lot of movie trailer music and stuff like that, and I just try to keep busy. And I have a couple other band projects kind of on the side as well, so I'm kind of all over the place at the moment. So we're all, I guess, to answer the question, we've all kind of just basically over all the years, we've all stayed friends, which is really awesome. We kind of knew each other at a young age, and through our whole lives, we've all remained friends, and we've always kept in touch. And Dave and I have kind of always played songs and played music together whenever I go back to Ohio for see my folks, and my parents are still there. Dave will try to set up a show usually, and we'll get up and we'll play in front of people, you know, back when it was playing. But so there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
So you would do some hometown shows together in Ohio?
He does a band in Ohio, a band that he's been doing for a while called the Breakfast Club, which does really great in the Cleveland area and all around Ohio, actually. And so he's got a lot of the connections with all the clubs there. So, like I said, like whenever I was to come in town, or Al would come in town, he would always try to set up a jam and do things like that. So we've always wanted to keep playing music together. In fact, Dave and I had a couple songs that we wrote for ABC Television as well during the interim of all those years, like you're mentioning. Through my connection with ABC, we got 3 or 4 songs into the system that play regularly on some of the, you know, regular programming. It could be anything from daytime to prime time. They just play whenever someone chooses to play. So they're in the system. So we get a little love over there as well, now and then.
So are you still working in the television market?
Yeah, I don't work as much in the television market. I work in the movie trailer market, is where all the doors have kind of opened over all the years of working with different companies. I did TV for so many years. I did, like I said, ABC was 15 plus years of just writing directly for 2020, or writing for One Life to Live, or writing for General Hospital, or whatever it was that they needed, any of their shows. And then it went over, I did Survivor for 3 years as a composer. I wanted to learn how to do that style of music, so I was fortunate enough to get introduced to a guy named Russell Emanuel, who runs a company called Extreme Music out here in LA. And they were just forming a company called Bleeding Fingers. Leading Fingers formed, and I was brought in to do Survivor right when that started. So that was a great opportunity as well. So I've done a lot of TV as well as movie trailers, and I just try to keep busy as much as I can. And I'm also doing a lot of mixing of band projects. I do a lot of recording. I'm working with a band called Not Your Girl right now. 3 girls and 4 awesome writers, and they have a great project. And I've been recording and mixing that project along, and I do a lot of that. A lot of mixing and mastering for all kinds of different projects for people as well.
So do you think some of these groups you're working with are going to make it to Machine Records? Are we going to see this label become your home away from home kind of thing?
I love the Machine Records because, first off, John Templeman is a wonderful human. He's just a great guy. He's been doing it for a while in Ohio. He's got probably like 50 50 or plus releases on Jim Machine at the moment. So we're stoked to be part of that. We want to work with Jib to expand, and hopefully we can break, not only get Jib to a bigger place, but get Slam and Gladys to get some more ears on, you know, after all these years between one and two, right?
Right. I see a familiar name on here, Clay Pasternak. Clay is a distributor I work with at my record store. So
that's
nice.
Awesome. Yeah, Clay, we met Clay through, I think, CPI, right? We were over my years of working, to tie back in with Clay here, over the years of working with different projects and stuff, I had the pleasure to work with Keith Olsen, the famous producer, the late Keith Olsen. He's now passed away. But and I met this guy named David Shackler through Keith. David Shackler's been in the business forever. He broke Queen, brought Queen to America back 30 years ago. A lot of big acolytes to his name. And he is the one who introduced Clay and CPI to myself, and then we all with Jib. And it's like a big, again, serendipity was a big part of this whole process. David and I were speaking, and he's like, you know, we're talking about, oh, yeah, we're working with this label. They're in Ohio. They're called Jib. He's like, Ohio? He goes, I have to hook you up with my friend Clay. You know, like, boom, right away it was there. Then instantly, within like a week, they had a deal going, and it was like one of those things. Like, the chances of our label being in Ohio and talking to David Shackler, then all of a sudden, then Clay being in Ohio was just one of those things.
Right.
Like you've got to be kidding me. And it all kind of just flourished into what we have now, which is this release with, it's just been great. It's been a great experience.
Well, you grew up in Cleveland, and we're here in Northwest Indiana at the Chicago market. So we're almost like Midwest neighbors here. What was the music scene like for you when you were getting your chops together before you got your record deal the first time around? I mean, what was the scene like for you, and what drew you into music?
The scene in Cleveland area when I was a kid, basically it was real metal for a long time. There's a lot of real real dark metal, like Slayer influence, or it could be Metallica influence, or it could have been just real dark. There's a band called Trouble that I remember.
I remember them.
And, there was like all these cool, like dark, you know, bands that we were into. I used to go to this record store every week with my friend Dan Simmons. He was a drummer friend of mine. We were going to make it together, and we used to go there every week. And I remember the guy at the store turned us on to like Queensryche, the first Queensryche EP. He turned us on to like Odin, a LA band, King Cobra. Gosh, I'm trying to remember more names. Like all these LA bands when we were in Ohio. And so we were real metalheads back then. And then I used to go all the time. There was a club called the Akron Agora, which was a big staple. The Cleveland Agora obviously had a huge following in its name. And then the Akron Agora was about a half hour down the road. Was a place where a lot of great music started happening. And that's when I first saw Dave Brooks, the singer from Slam and Gladys, when I saw play with a band called Gotham City at the Akron Agora. And I was like 16. And I'll never forget watching these guys, and it was, you know, it was Dave Brooks, it was Mark Matthews on bass, it was Tony Martin on guitar, just killer players, the top, you know, A class players of whoever was there was the best guys, and they were just pulling off like Dreams by Van Halen, they were pulling off Yankee Rose at the time, Roth, and who else? They were just pulling off Journey, all kinds of great, like Faithfully, just songs that singers just didn't pull off, and he was just killing everything, and I was just sitting there looking at this guy going, man, I wish I could be in a band with this guy. This guy is going to be huge, you know? That's what my thought process was. And, so the metal, it was metal, and then it went into a lot of, like, soul searching and discovering of all these great other talented musicians and bands, and just kind of a lot of soul. But I was a metalhead, man. I was like, when Metallica's Kill 'Em All came out, man, that was my anthem. I was like, that was like the thing, man. It was like every morning, me and my friends would just go crazy on that album. It was like, and we were big metalheads back then. It's kind of surprising to hear our album now and think I was a metalhead. But
yeah, this has a lot of popness to it. It's melodic rock, I guess you'd say, not pop. Not that pop's a bad word, but I think sometimes pop is misleading. But you're very melodic in your approach, and even with the first band, you were as well.
Right. Yeah, melodic is a good way to, melodic is something that we always try to have if there's a hook or something. Or I remember we were trying to, when Dave and I were writing Dragon Eye Girl, we were at my mom's, my mom and dad's house in Cleveland. And we were in the den in the back room, and I'll never forget. We were sitting there, like, we need something like with a rhythm, like something like that's gonna catch people and latch them on. And we literally were thinking like that, and then Dave just started going, man. He just poured out the whole chorus, and I was like, "Holy smokes, here we go!
Wow.
We have something on our hands now." And I'll never forget that moment of, like, you know, we Toxic Lover and Dragon Eye Girl were basically kind of born on that time in my parents' den, which is pretty cool. This is like after the record hasn't already started, so this is later. So we were adding songs, so it's kind of fun.
Dragon Eye Girl is the first single, and we just played that. How has, obviously the album comes out today, but you did an advance on Dragon Eye Girl. What kind of response have you guys gotten, either from the media or from radio or from, you know, I mean, it's hard to, you're not touring, you're not putting in front of the public, so
yeah.
I don't know what kind of barometer you can use, but what kind of response have you gotten?
Well, the response we've gotten has been wonderful, considering that we've been not, like, in the scene for a bit, you know? We have discovered we have a lot of pockets of fans that we have in different areas and stuff like that. And so far, the video review that we've gotten, I mean, we have, I think it's close, the video, it topped over 20,000 plays. I know, which isn't a huge feat, but it's certainly for guys like us, again, it's being something that people are, you know, listening and hopefully listening two or three times. And we're hoping that can translate into sales. But The overall feeling and the vibe so far has been, you know, just overwhelmingly positive, which has been such a reward, knowing that, you know, you put something out for at this time, you want to make sure you do something, you want to do your best work at all times.
Right.
And just knowing that we're getting good startup reviews. We're going to start getting a lot of album reviews now as it comes out, which is really something I'm looking forward to. You know, we'll take the good and the bad, and we'll grow from whatever we get.
All right. You mentioned Toxic Lover, and that's the lead track. It's actually at this time, my tastes always change with every listen of an album. But right now, Toxic Lover is my favorite. So let's play this, and we'll be back and talk some more with J.J. Ferris. Stay with us.
Color that I see, threading the border of insanity.
Toxic Lovers. We've all had a few of those, I think. New music, Slammin' Gladys. That's album number two, aptly titled Slammin' Gladys 2. A few decades after their debut, which came out in 1992. This one released today, and it's got nine great tracks, original stuff. My guest is JJ. JJ Ferris is the guitarist, the producer of the show, background vocals, you name it. He plays it all. And JJ, let's talk about these songs. They sound very contemporary, but with a nod to the late 80s, early 90s, perhaps. Were these all newly written for this album?
Yeah, they, not all. Let's see, there was probably, I'm thinking, probably three songs. I'm looking at the titles here. I'm trying to think what was written before. Like, new songs for sure. Toxic Lovers, new. Dragon Eye Girls, new. Lose My Mind, new. Durango, Blue Skies, Hold Up My Blue Sky. That's a song that we had for a bit that never got released.
Okay.
That we're happy to have on this album. Let's see what else we have. Light Up was kind of a, it used to be called Funky Cool back in the day when we were working on songs back in our first album. It never got finished, and we took the riff from Funky Cool, and we kind of made it into Light Up. We kind of reinvented it. And the Steve has the rap in there, and that rap was the same, almost the same as it was back in the day. So we kept that and kept some of the cool parts of it. Ice Water was a song that Dave was a new song that Dave had, so that's new. And then Poison Arrow, that song goes back. That was the first song when the band first. Well, when I first met Dave, that was one of the songs that he had written prior to me meeting him, and it was an epic song, like one of those songs. I guess there was a story when he was singing it acoustically at a party with some people around, and no one knew who he was. Like, he literally got management and a couple other people just by playing the song that day, because it just stuck with people. So Poison Arrow is the seventh song epic that we had. We released it as a demo back in like 93 or 4, but it never got released properly as on an album. So we're happy to have all those older tracks back on a new album. But to answer your question, it's like maybe like 70-30, 70 new, 30 old.
Okay. SlammingGladys.com is where you can keep up with the band. SlammingGladys.com. And slam in, not ing. Get that G out of there. So anyway, you were the producer, and you mixed this project. This was all newly recorded when?
Well, we started in August of 2018.
Okay.
And we went to a place called Analog Digital Recording. It's in West Hollywood. A friend of mine named Doug Messenger, really great guy, guitar player. He's owned the studio for like 30 years. I did some other recording there. So we were fortunate to get him there. So the basic tracks were recorded with Doug Messenger and at the studio, like the drums and the bass. And what I did then was we brought everything back to my studio at my house in L.A. here. And we started going at it. You know, it wasn't a fast process. It was kind of like we didn't have anything to rush for. We took our time. We did it step by step. It was one of those passion projects, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, it wasn't really meant to be a full album at first. So it kind of over periods of time just became this what it is now because of just the sheer determination of keeping up with it. Right.
Right. Was COVID a factor in expanding it beyond just like an EP?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a factor only because of the travel, because you know Al came from Nashville and Dave was from Ohio. We did the video for Dragon Eye Girl. COVID, you know, it was kind of, we just went through it. We wore masks and we just stayed safe as much as we could. It affected us a little bit, but truthfully, it didn't really stop us from getting to where we needed to go.
You were part of the MTV generation when they actually played music videos and were launching. What was it like making a video again after so long?
It was great, man. It was so interesting. We were saying how fun it was to be, because we were on a rooftop in Los Angeles downtown. It was like the hottest day I think I can't remember. It was like almost 100 degrees or something to that fact.
Wow.
It was a warm day that day, and I just remember being up there. We were just it was so hot, and we were just like we were just having so much fun in like this crazy rooftop. And it was one point where I went up on there was like a little ledge that I found out later you weren't supposed to walk up. So I did a whole performance on the ledge, and then a security guard came up running at, like he saw me up there from all the way down like 20 stories below ordering food, and he ran up to tell me I couldn't stand up there anymore. It's hilarious. But we got a whole take on the roof around this little ledge that I could have fallen off from whatever. It wasn't stable from what I learned after the fact. So,
wow.
So hopefully it'll be in the Hold Up My Blue Skies video, which is going to be next. Some of the epic, like I'm saying, being up on the roof. So we had a good time, man. It was fun making videos. I mean, like, as you said, the MTV generation, as I knew it growing up, I mean, it was so much fun, like watching that whole thing happen, and then it went away so quickly after that, you know, and it was great to make a video, and there's so many cool places you can play videos these days that we're learning about it. It gets all over the country now.
Right. It really was a boom. MTV saved the music business. A lot of them said, you know, a video killed the radio star, but in fact, it resurrected a lot of the music, and it made the bands work harder. Because you had to look good, act good. You couldn't stand there. The shoegazing days were gone. You had to actually pump it up, so to speak. And I loved it. I remember working with people like John Sykes and going on tour with Tiffany when she did the mall tour. And I was in a couple of Enough's Enough videos here in Chicago. And it was just brilliant. It was a brilliant marketing situation that I don't understand why videos stopped, really, when you think about it. And now we're seeing them come back a little bit on the YouTube. So,
yeah, they come. There's a bunch of channels. Our singer Dave was at the gym in Ohio, and he was working out, and Dragon Eye Girl came on the other day, and he was like, you know, I don't know who was on it. It was like Bon Jovi and then Led Zeppelin and all of a sudden Slam Gladys. And Dave's like, whoa, you know, he's working out. So there's video, a lot of video outlets that we're learning about as our video circulates a bit more.
That had to be a pretty good trip. I mean, you're up there running on the treadmill or something, and then suddenly there you are.
Right. He's like, he said it was like, for a second he didn't, he was like, it's the real feeling, like, you know, whoa, what am I hearing? I know that, but what?
Now, what was it like for you when Slam and Gladys first came out? You guys had some hits. I'm trying to remember. Color Me Gone?
Yeah,
right?
We had Color Me Gone. We had Bad Attitude was our first.
Bad Attitude.
Out of the box. That was the one. And then we had, Jamie Lane had sung on a song called What You Need, which was a song as well. And then, yeah, we had a couple that were getting some good circulation at the time. A lot of Headbangers Ball.
Right.
MTV back in the day, and stuff like that. We got a lot of plays there and some radio plays. We had a lot of places over the country. Chicago actually being one of them. I'm going to try to remember the club. I don't know if I will. The Thirsty Whale. Was that a Neil?
Thirsty Whale. Yes.
Okay. And I remember playing there, and I remember Enough's Enough. It was actually jamming with them. We jammed with them a couple of times, if I remember correctly.
They played there a lot. They played there a lot.
Yeah, I have a little bit of memory. That's cool. I'm glad I was on.
Yeah, Thirsty Whale. There was the Cabaret Metro. There was a few of them that that had a lot of the MTV era bands, and especially some of the metal stuff. I had a club called that I worked at called Club Dimension. In fact, you mentioned Janie. Warrant was our last band. It was New Year's Eve, and it was Janie was sick. He had had food poisoning or something, but he wanted to do the show. And I just remember that I was the DJ and booking guy, and I was standing by the stage door, and he kept running out the stage door in between songs while the guys were jamming and, you know, and losing his lunch, so to speak. And it was just an incredible night, and I remember just the professionalism of him just saying, you know, the show must go on, and he pulled it together enough to get through a song before he'd run out the back door again. He wound up in the hospital that night, dehydrated. And it was the last show I did at that club, and it makes it memorable.
Yeah, he was. He's that guy, man. No matter what, show must go on. That's exactly the mentality, Janie, through the whole thing. What a group, man. What a talent. I mean, I have nothing to say, but what a talent. He was such a great part of our life. Back then, and you know, will always be a great part of our lives, man. Too bad that things ended up as they did. But
right.
Man.
Now, he produced your first album. How did that come about? I mean, Warrant was already well on their way, and they had, major hits, and how did you run into them, and how did he wind up, you know, handling the sliders for you?
Yeah, he came in, he produced executives, I think executive producers, he did a lot of things, but Al Collins, our bass player, was in a band with Janie in L.A. here before any of the Warrants or anything. It's called Plain Jane. In fact, I think they're going to be reissuing the Plain Jane songs, which there might be some Warrant songs on there from what I've heard as well. Early demos of like stuff like Heaven and things like that. So I think they're releasing that. But so Al played in the band with Janie back then, and Dave was always friends with Janie because they were both singers. They were always jamming together and stuff. They kind of grew up singing, you know, at the same place. So we were always friends, or they were always friends with Janie. And then when Slam and Gladys came about, you know, he wanted to get involved because he really thought the band was cool, and he took us on tour. I mean, we were opening up for Warrant right when it was a Pauly Shore tour. Pauly Shore joined Warrant. It was from Florida to New York City, 2 weeks, and Uncle Tom's Cabin was on the radio. And I'm not going to say anything else. You don't have to say much more. It was just insane. I can't remember much of that tour, but I can say that it was one of the most amazing 2 weeks that I can remember.
Wow.
At the time, what a great time to be on tour with them, you know, and playing fun of, and just, it was a club tour, but they were just so much fun. It was just packed everywhere we went.
Now, you produced this album. Janie produced the last one. Years later, now you're producing, you're in that chair. Did you remember when you were working on this album, any nuggets of knowledge that maybe he passed on to you as in production values?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Janie, we go back a while. We go back a long ways. Meaning, we're talking about recording here. Janie used to have his studio in my basement in L.A., and he would come over. This was after, like, when Warren was going. He was doing a solo project on the side, and he basically had his whole studio over here, and we were working all the time. I was asked to play on a song called "Stronger Now."
Okay.
Which is a great Warrant song. So I was asked to play nylon guitar on that with Janie. So I was always involved as a production, not as production, but as playing guitar with him or on some Warrant albums. Like I said, I was fortunate to get on there. And then production is something that I've always just, since I was a kid, I've always, like, I used to have a boombox like with a dual cassette, and I had an external microphone, and I used to multi-track my cassette player before I really knew what was going on. I used to take one cassette, record it, put it on the other side, and then flip them and keep doing that. So there's like 30 layers
on
stuff. And I would just totally be fascinated with multi-tracking. And so I was always just mesmerized by the fact that you could have this idea in your head, record it, and then play it back to the speakers, and it just blows your mind. That was fascinating to me. I always was fascinated by the process of that. So at an early age, I got it into production. I mean, I learned a lot of things from Janie during the time that he was at the house. I also was fortunate to work with a guy named James Barton, Jimbo Barton.
Okay, I'm not familiar with him.
Jimbo was just a wonderful, like, producer. I mean, he used to work for Trevor Horn back in the day. He used to get the drum sounds for all the Trevor Horn albums, you know, the big Yes album, and he was just a top-notch A-list guy, and I got to meet him through another band project, and we worked together at my studio after the fact for probably like 12 years together. So I literally Jimbo, I can call him my mentor. And so I've learned from so many different people over the years. But my biggest mentor of production and learning basically how things are supposed to sound through the speakers, how to mic something. I used to think that you used to have to have an expensive mic to get a good sound, or you have to have the best guitar, or you have to have the best amp or the best gear. And it's so not about any of that. It's about capturing the essence of what it is you're trying to say, and to a point where you're capturing that performance more than it is anything else. Not about the mic. It could be the crappiest sounding thing ever, but as long as the message is there, it doesn't really matter what it sounds like, you know, as long as the feeling is there, people can see through it, you know, if it's not, you know, not all there. So taking on the production was a big thing for me. I've never done that on a full album before, being producer and mixer and the whole thing. So it was a good project. It was an undertaking, but a wonderful, rewarding project at the same time.
Well, you guys obviously stayed busy in the music business, but you hadn't played as a band together. What was it like? All of a sudden, there you are. The four of you are in the studio, and you're starting to record and write music together, new music. What was the feeling like? What was the chemistry?
There was not a step lost. There wasn't a breath miss. It was exactly like we were just. It's the weirdest thing with these guys. I mean, put 20 years between us, put whatever you want. But when we get in a room together, there's this thing that happens, and there's this some of the four parts together when everybody contributes to their own individual instrument. It's just it has a sound that's undeniable, that sounds like us, and that's something we really tried to capture and keeping it consistent or keeping it somewhat relevant to the first one at the same time, but like you said, try to make it more current at the same time. So it was a fine balance to kind of bring it all.
I think you succeeded, because it definitely sounds like Slamming Gladys, but it doesn't sound dated.
Good. That's a good sign.
So let's play another song for the listeners. What would you like to play? I have people here. We've done Dragon Eye. We've done Toxic. What else?
Let's do, you could pick it. Either Hold On My Blue Sky or Durango.
They're both good ones. Let's do Hold Up My Blue Sky, which is track number five on the new album.
Yeah, that's going to be our next video and next release, so that's cool.
Okay, this is brand new music. Slamming Gladys 2 is the album. It is officially out today. You can find out more at slamminggladys.com, and we'll be back with JJ after this. New music, Slamming Gladys. Hold Up My Blue Sky. That is brand new music from Slam and Gladys. And my guest here on Midwest Beats on Lakeshore Public Radio is J.J. Ferris. He's a guitarist and producer of the band, one of the original members. And all of the original members, in fact, are back for the second album. Was it hard, J.J., getting all the guys to say, yeah, we're going to do this again? Were there any holdouts that you had to convince? Twist Arms?
Not even close, no. Everyone was so excited at the thought of it. Especially with all the COVID going on, like to do something creative, they don't have to like think about reality. It was a good time.
Right, kind of go back to your youthful days.
Yeah, it's fun. We're having a great time with it. Like I was mentioning before, like when we get together, it's like there's no time lost between any of us. It just right. seems like we're just right there.
So with this one now in the can, now officially released today, and with Dragon Eye Girl already released as a single, and you've got more coming up, more videos in the can, what's the game plan? I mean, you're getting good response. Have you talked about, is there going to be a Slam and Gladys 3 or a 4, or is this a full-time reunion, or what is this?
Oh, yeah, we already have songs for 3. We've already started writing, and the plan is to continue to promote this one. We're hoping to get out and start playing at some point. That's going to be the fun part if we get to do that. We're hoping to promote this as much as we can. We have 4 videos planned at the moment, and we're, like I said, we're working on number 2 at the moment for Hold Up My Blue Sky. And it's going to be, I hope there's 3, 4, and 5. I mean, let's pray.
Now, back in the day, you were with Priority Records. Do you guys retain the rights? Is that going to be reissued in any way?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They gave us back the rights to it, funny enough, after so many years. It was like a clause that we got the rights back into it. So it is released. The first album, actually, I remastered the first album because it was done so long ago, it just needed to be a little bit fresh, I guess. So there is a remastered version of Slam and Gladys 1. It's available on Jim Machine Records, JIB Machine, and slamandgladys.com and so forth. They have it there. But, it's definitely out there. The remastered version is really cool because there's things now that we're hearing that we really didn't hear as before, like some of the little nuances or background little noises or things that kind of came out as we remastered it.
I've got to say, it was one of the one of those albums that when you're in a record store, you're walking through the aisles and the cover makes you do a head spin and you say, whoa, what is that? I would buy back in the day a lot of albums, whether they were in the cutout bins or mainstream releases, by the artwork. So thank God vinyl's back. But I mean, that album, I remember seeing that for the first time in a store and saying, I'm going to buy that just because. I hope the band's good, but the cover's rocking.
We were just having this conversation. It was so funny you say that. We were saying, like, yeah, we could put something on the cover and like people that like this will buy it, or you know, it's like so funny we were having that conversation. That was quite a cover. I'll never forget doing that photo shoot on the train track. So we were there that day, and I forget her name. She was a playmate of some sort, but we were trying to remember her name the other day. Remember a girl named Julie Strange, who had unfortunately just passed.
Yeah, I remember her.
She did some other posters, and she did some other things that we had some kind of promotional things. Unfortunately, she just passed. But the girl that was on the tracks, I don't remember her name, but man, that was a day. It was the middle of the day, and there she is, you know, on the railroad track. I'm like, wow.
Wow. Okay. To be that engineer, that's all I had to say.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So with that being reissued and with the CD out now and talking about vinyl, like I had mentioned, I have 2 record stores now, and we sell tons of vinyl. Are you going to think about reissuing any of this? Has Jib Machine done any vinyl releases yet?
They have done some vinyl, and we have been talking about vinyl, and we hope to get this for sure, the Slam and Gladys 2 album in vinyl down the road here. We didn't start right off the top with it, but we are going to get there eventually. And if we can have Slam and Gladys 1 become vinyl at some point, that would be pretty spectacular too, but we haven't gotten that far yet. But definitely within the talks, we're talking about both of those being vinyl for sure.
I could see it being very marketable to package them together. Most of the new releases are double albums. Why not do Then and Now?
There you go. Well, there you, I'm gonna make sure we bring that up, because if you can get double the amount of Slam and Gladys songs to save money, that's a good deal, man.
Yeah, talk to John about that and say, hey, you know, I mean, my record store will buy it. I'll put it on the wall, especially if you got right that on. Original cover. Holy cow.
Right on. Right, exactly.
So
we have posters of that around somewhere, so we have to hook you up with some posters.
I'd love it. I'd love it. So let's talk a little bit about how you got to where you are. What is it? What was it that made you say, yeah, maybe music's my bag. Maybe that's what I'm going to do for a career. What inspired you? When did you first pick up a guitar? When did you first decide this is something that you needed? What influenced you?
Well, that's a good question. I at 12 years old, I was in all kinds of trouble. I don't know. I was an only child. Got into trouble a lot. And my mom bought me an acoustic guitar, a nylon string guitar, to keep me out of trouble, literally. So 2 years went by. At 12 years old, I never really picked it up. And then I remember the first time I picked it up, and I wanted to learn Iron Man from Black Sabbath.
And I'm like, yeah.
That riff, you know, the ultimate riff that we all, you know, love. And I'll never forget the first time I played that on the acoustic. I'm like, okay, this is cool. I got excited. And then my dad, after I started getting excited about the acoustic, he took me to the music store, and I'll never forget that moment, man. I had a Harmony Les Paul copy guitar, and I had a PV Decade amp. It was a little tiny one speaker, small. And I'll never forget that first time, man, when I hit that the E chord, and I heard the distortion. Instantly, right then and there, I knew that's what I wanted to do. Like, it just clicked, like in a heartbeat. And then, so I started doing bands locally. Like I said before, I got the chance to meet Dave when I was about 16, going to the Akron Agora, started looking at all that. And then eventually I just decided that Ohio, Cleveland area was cool, but I felt like I couldn't be more than just the Ohio guy there. It was a small market, and I wanted to think bigger. So I literally, I applied for Berklee College of Music when I was 18. And I'll never forget the day when I got the letter saying that I was denied Berklee. And I looked at my mom. I looked at the letter. I literally, within a minute of seeing the no, I decided I was going to California, to Hollywood. And told my mom, I said, Mom, I'm going to Hollywood. I'm going to California. And she's like, what? And literally 2 months later, driving out to California with my dad. And that was it. I was just kind of determined to do something substantial. Like, as a kid, MTV generation, being a huge music fan, being a guitarist, noticing that when I played guitar at my house, I used to have like groups of people like watch me at my own house. Like, this is weird. Like, why are people watching me? You know what I mean? We used to have band practice down in our basement. We used to have like 20 people every time we practiced. It was like a fun thing. And I was like, this is so much fun, but I want to take this to a whole nother level, you know?
So right.
That was kind of the mentality and how. Somewhat of how it got to where it is.
So was it easy to convince the folks that you wanted to be a rock star and that moving to California and LA was the answer? And
yeah.
Any
real supportive. Yeah. Real supportive.
Okay. I was going to say, that's kind of a, not usually the story. Usually it's like, what? You're not going there with all those freaky people? Get a real job.
Yeah. I was an only child too, so it was rough for them. And I mean, years later, I've never gone back to live there.
Right.
So, it was a big move, but I didn't have any hesitation. Like, my parents, they were the first ones at the shows. They came to like New York at the Limelight when we opened up for Warrant. We opened up for Ace Frehley there. They came to those shows. They would come to all kinds of shows, all in Ohio shows or whatever shows were going on. They were always there, loving it. Family was great. So my mom and dad, they still live in Ohio, and they're great. They're the most supportive, amazing parents that anyone could ask for.
Wow. All right. Well, let's play another song as we say goodbye. It's getting time to say goodbye. But is there anything we haven't touched on that you want to let people know?
Well, all I want to say to everyone out there is Slam and Gladys is now offering 9 songs that we put a lot of love and passion and into, and we're so happy that we finally get to share this product with the world, with all of our fans and with people that might just be discovering us. So FlannelGladys.com, please listen to the music or go to MerchBucket. MerchBucket.com has all the Slam and Gladys. You can get like shirts, the masks, the hats, anything's on there, all the merch and all the album. And we have some giveaways there too. I think there's some free downloads if you were to go to MerchBucket.com.
Okay.
And look up Slam and Gladys.
Excellent. And I want to definitely get some vinyl from you guys. So put a bug in somebody's ear over there at Jib Machine, because I guarantee you, you're going to start selling some of that stuff. We're seeing so much of the vintage stuff coming back, and CDs are dead. I mean, in my store, CDs are dead compared to vinyl, you know?
Right.
So we've got to get that out. Even cassettes are back in style.
That's what I heard. I did hear that yesterday.
We sell a lot of used cassettes, and I guess a few artists are actually, like Marilyn Manson put out their new album on cassettes, and from what I'm told, it was all because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
You know, the guy had the mixtape in the movie, the big space hero, and kids would go to the movie, and they'd say to their parents, "What is that thing?" And they'd say, "It's a cassette." "Well, what's that?" "Well, come home. We'll show you." And some of the local Goodwill stores and things sold out of cassette players because kids were going in and buying them for $2 and coming in and getting 50-cent cassette tapes. And it's reborn, not like vinyl, but it's respectable.
I remember the days of wearing out the cassette tapes, man.
I remember 8-tracks where they'd click in the middle of the song.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, great, Tom. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. What would you like to close with? What song would you like us to leave the listeners with?
Let's close with Lose My Mind.
Lose My Mind. That's track number 3 off the new album, Slammin' Gladys 2. And again, slamminggladys.com. Merchandise, bios. There will be tour dates at some point, we know. So stay in touch with them and check it out. Check out the videos. Thank you, JJ.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Have a great day.
All right. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the road soon, I hope.
Excellent, Tom. We'll see you for sure. And vinyl coming your way, we'll figure that out.
All right. Good to know.
All right, man.
All right. Time to lose our minds collectively. This is Lose My Mind, new music from Slammin' Gladys. On Midwest Beats, you're listening to 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio, and lakeshorepublicradio.org.
See, I drink too much, and I smoke that stuff. Seems like a little bit is never enough. Well, I'm right here, but I wanna be there. I'm right here, but I'm not all there. No, no. Lose my mind sometimes. I lose my mind sometimes. Lose my mind sometimes. I lose my mind sometimes. Yes. I was playing tough when the going gets rough. Don't wanna be here, but I still show up. You say I can't hear, you're coming in clear. You say I can't hear, just disappear, man.
Lose my mind.
losing my mind. I think it's a daily occurrence with me. Lounge is here. Midwest Beat is the show. Show all about music and the people who make it. And we just say goodbye to J.J. Ferris. He is the guitarist, producer, keyboardist, does a little percussion on this album. And more importantly, he's one of the original founding members, as is all of this band. Back after almost 30 years, it came out in 1992, their first album, Slammin' Gladys 1, and this is Slammin' Gladys 2. Dave Brooks back on lead and background vocals, JJ as mentioned on guitars, Al Collins on bass, Stephen DeBoard on percussion and drums, and Stephen even raps on one of the songs. We're going to play that in just a second here. I just want to give you that website, slamminggladys.com. So slamminggladys.com. Put that all together. Put it in your pipe and smoke it. All right, good stuff. We're going to have a wonderful guest on Tuesday. An old friend of mine is going to be joining me on the Tuesday night edition of Midwest Beat. Mr. Gunnar Nelson, half of the band Nelson from the 1980s, late 1980s, early 90s. And Nelson's still together doing stuff. He is one of the twins. He has since cut his long flowing mane of blonde hair that you might remember from Love and Affection video, speaking of MTV. But Gunnar's always fun to have on the show. He's a regular. He's been on a couple of, several times, but not so much in the last year or so. So we're going to welcome Gunnar back coming up next Friday. We'll have Joe Williams, singer of Toto, going back to our first hour today with Steve Lukather. We're going to have Joe joining us, and he'll continue the conversation that we began with Steve Lukather, because those guys are two peas in a pod and have some compatible companion records coming out. So it's just, I love this show, because we get to spotlight all these amazing, talented people, and not only reflect on their historic pasts, as we have today with both of these great artists, but we also get to feature their brand new music and show them to be just as talented and gifted and just as creative as ever. Some of the new music as these artists evolve is the best stuff they've ever done. And again, I love this new Slammin' Gladys, especially the single, Dragon Eye Girl. Check out the video. Check out Toxic Lover. And the new video is Hold Up My Blue Sky, which we played a few minutes ago. And just keep supporting live and local music and, of course, your favorite bands wherever in the world they may be. And until we meet on Tuesday with Gunnar Nelson as our guest, I'm going to leave you and bid you a fond adieu and adios. This is Light Up, and it features the drummer, Stephen DeBoard, doing a little bit of rap in there. So enjoy it. Our final track of the show, our final one from Slammin' Gladys. Adios, everyone. Light Up!